Blog Talk Radio.
And greetings. Welcome to another segment of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and you are in tune to a special edition of New Day. For those of you who follow our weekly broadcast, then you know we come on normally every Saturday night at 10:30 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and we will do so again tomorrow night for our regular broadcast. However, tonight we wanted to provide you the opportunity to share with us two things. One being, of course, the upcoming Earth Day of El Hajj Malik al-Shabazz. Of course, that Earth Day is May the 19th, which will be Sunday. And we want to pay a special tribute to, as we know him and many others have known and called him, our Black Shining Prince, El Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, again, also known as Malcolm X Shabazz. But we also want tonight to pay tribute to this grandson of El Hajj Malik al-Shabazz, known as Malcolm Latif Shabazz. For those who do not know, of course, today was the day of services, funeral services, going home services, if we may. And we are going to have very shortly joining us Chairman Fred Hampton Jr., who did, in fact, attend the services for today and will give us an update on some of the more recent developments that we have heard, and we are still trying to confirm some of the reports that we have received. We're going to also talk with Dr. Randy Short, who we've had on our show also, on our program, numerous times. And it just so happened that our brother was, of course, a very close associate to Malcolm Shabazz, Malcolm Latif Shabazz, who, of course, was 28 years old at the time of his death, which occurred on May the 9th. Just a few days ago. The circumstances for his death is still not very clear. What we do know is that there are two suspects who have been arrested in Mexico who have been said to be responsible for his death. We've heard several different stories, of course, some that were conflicting with others. But nevertheless, what we do know is that this young brother, who really had a tremendous future, life has been taken. Before we continue on, we are going to, of course, as we normally do, give thanks and praises to our Creator. And certainly we are very, very appreciative of our freedom-fighting ancestors. And again, we bring you this broadcast tonight to give you the opportunity to share your thoughts. We're going to open up the chat room in about 15 minutes or so that you can post what you may like to post. We certainly invite you to do that. But we, again, want to bring to your attention that it is so important that as a community, that we continue to stay very, very vigilant in getting as much information as we possibly can when it comes to the death, and particularly when we know it's under circumstances that unfortunately are of a certain type. You know, it behooves us to make certain that we pay close attention and that we continue to look into this matter as closely as possible so that, you know, we do justice to our ancestors, but also to our community, because when people feel, and I'm speaking of the enemy in this particular case, feel that they can do things or that things can happen, whether they do it or not, when we do not act as if it is of some real concern to us, or act as if we really, you know, are paying attention, then anything can happen, and oftentimes does. And certainly the truth is oftentimes not obtained. So myself and others, again, we're going to have Dr. Randy Short on very shortly, who, again, was a very close comrade, confidant, ally, and brother to Malcolm Latif Shabazz. I had the opportunity only to physically talk with him once. He, of course, was on our radio program maybe a year ago, but I can certainly contest to the fact that what I saw was a very brilliant young man who certainly was on his way to really becoming, I think, a very important and a very powerful brother in our community. And when I say that, I'm speaking of a global perspective, an African global perspective. I'm going to play something briefly, and I think this will give you a general idea of how articulate, how intelligent, how really profound this young man was. And again, I think it behooves us to continue in the type of spirit that I feel he would want us to in doing what we do, as well as continuing the work that he obviously was attempting to do and preparing further to do. We want to bring that side to you tonight, because certainly the media has, for the most part, painted a very, unbright image, you know, for lack of a better terminology. And, you know, we're not trying to sugarcoat anything here on New Day, but what we do know is that we have to make certain that the positive is always exemplified as we bring the truth and speak that through power. But certainly, again, I know what I saw, and those of you who know me know that I don't sugarcoat anything for anybody. I have no need to do that. I have no reason to do that. So I know what I saw. I saw someone with much great potential. I think others saw that too, and perhaps some saw it and didn't want that to happen. So we need to, again, look very, very closely at this situation, and we will, okay? Very shortly, we're going to go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Dr. Randy Short, who, again, traveled to Libya with Brother Malcolm, of course, along with former Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney. Of course, Brother Malcolm was on his way to Iran, and, of course, there were some difficulties that came into existence with that. We will probably read some of the statement that he wrote shortly after that experience. Again, just to give you some insight, people talk about COINTELPRO from a historical perspective. We oftentimes do not talk about it in its present-day context. And perhaps we should. Perhaps this situation has, brought us to the point where we must examine certain types of operations that are happening today that tend to destroy or attempt to impede or worse our movements, our strive, our quest for freedom. So, again, we're going to get ready to go to our live line. But before we do, I want to share with you the voice of Malcolm Latif Shabazz, and let you hear for yourself some of the insight, some of the thoughts of this young man. And, again, we're going to open up the chat room in about 10 minutes or so that you can post your comments, questions, et cetera. You know, we're not trying to say that there was a conspiracy, because we are not, that flippant nor that sensationalized type of mindset to do that. But what we will do is examine the facts and the information that we do have, and whatever comes from that is whatever comes from that. So with that said, this is Brother Malcolm Latif Shabazz. Again, we want to share just a little bit with you.
Well, joining me now live from New York is Hajj Malcolm El Shabazz, the grandson of Malcolm X. Thank you so much, sir, for being with us. The first question that I put to you, if you can hear me now is speaking since the murder of your grandfather, Malcolm X. How deep-rooted is the issue of racism still in the United States?
The issue of racism is very deep-rooted. It's something that's ingrained within the culture of the people and the politics of the society of this nation.
So basically, the issue is, what we know, was for one, Ms. Al-Shabaab, that the U.S. is now seeing an African-American president, it's now seeing an African-American attorney general. Why hasn't this changed the situation? Rather, do you think that it has had an effect on the situation for African-Americans?
As far as the presidency, me personally, I don't believe in the presidency. I believe that the presidency post in the United States is nothing more than a puppet post. And when we see movements like the Occupy movement, where you have the 99% fighting against that 1%, it's not about color. It's about that minority which keeps control of the majority. When Bill Clinton became president, many black people considered Bill Clinton to be the first black president. Why? Because he smoked a little weed, played the saxophone, he had the oral sex situation in the White House with Monica Lewinsky, many things that they feel appeal to black people. The United States is the land of smoke and mirrors, and they're very good at what they do. For all these reasons, people consider Bill Clinton to be the first black president, but during Bill Clinton's administration, there were more black people of color, incarcerated at an all-time Guinness Book World Records height than during any other administration before him. So it's not really a case of whether you're black or you're white. It's a case of that minority that keeps control of the majority. There's no difference between Bush, Clinton, Obama. They're all the same. They had Bush out here, and they gave him free reign to do whatever it is that he wanted to do. The people were ready to rebel against Bush. We had the most people of color that ever registered to vote in history to get him out. You had entertainers. You had politicians. You had musicians. Everyone was speaking out against Bush, yet he was still able to become president. And, you know, it's very interesting. I don't even know anyone that voted for Bush. But here it is, we have Obama, and Obama is doing the exact same thing as Bush and every other president that came before him. There's no difference between a Democrat or a Republican, and we make no distinction between one president or another. All they did was put a black face on imperialism. People were ready to rebel because of the actions of Bush. They put that black face up there, and everybody fell back and became passive. So it's smoke and mirrors.
Okay, well, that obviously says a lot. I think clearly there was things that are said here that many of us say, and so obviously there was definitely what we would call quite a bit of insight and development that has occurred here, or that had occurred. So, again, we're going to play a little more of that a little later on, but what we're going to do now is go to our live line, and we're going to talk with Dr. Randy Short, who, as I indicated earlier, was a very close associate, ally, but perhaps more importantly, a brother, you know. You know, we sometimes don't put things in the perspective of family. But for some of us, this movement is that. We interact with one another in a form of an extended family. At least some of us attempt to do that. And in as such, we take the position that we must expose behavior that tends to be to the contrary, or that tends to create a demise, be it of big or small type. So, again, what we're going to do is go to our live line, and joining us tonight is Dr. Randy Short, who is a scholar, historian, an activist, an advocate, and as I said earlier, you know, perhaps in a more simpler but more profound and important way, a brother. A black brother, an African brother. So we're going to talk to Dr. Randy Short, Brother Randy Short, and then we're going to bring in Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Tim and Fred, of course, did in fact attend these services today, so we're going to get a direct report from him about today's funeral going home services. But we're going to go to Dr. Randy Short first, and then we're going to bring in Tim and Fred Hampton Jr. Brother Randy, do we have you on our line?
Hotep.
My Hotep, rather.
How you doing?
You know, doing what we do.
I can't thank you enough for the honor, the opportunity, the blessing to try to at least share some of what I knew about this fine and wonderful brother that I had the chance, I mean, a once-in-a-lifetime chance to be in the same room as Muammar Gaddafi and Malcolm Latif El-Shabazz. I mean, that's the beginning of that. And
wow.
I start that is something. You know, I did not know of this young man until the FBI thing broke out when he was five. And I'll just say a little of this, and then we'll get right into it. I actually want you to ask me questions. That way I can go faster. And you know how to cut
okay.
me off. You're good at that. I want to say that for me, the first name that I can remember ever hearing as a child was the name Malcolm.
Mm-hmm.
Because when Malcolm X was shot and killed, my father screamed and cried when I was about 2 or 3 weeks old. That's the first time I can recall any human being crying out in pain was associated with Malcolm X. So it was a name that I knew less than 3 weeks old. I didn't know what it meant, but I knew it caused my father to cry. And my father, who was a very strict disciplinarian, did not like nicknames, but the only nickname that was probably used maybe 4 or 5 times in my life, my father named me Malcolm. And
wow.
my father went out and bought books on Malcolm X, bought posters of Malcolm X, and put them up in my room over my bed. So that's how, and one of the first and earliest books, I mean, were the children's books on Malcolm X that my father bought and would not read, insisted that I read them for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And so my father had many, many books on Malcolm X. So that's, and I think that there are millions of people who came up like I did. But I just, there's a closeness to the Shabazz family spiritually. Their home was firebombed 4 days after
mm-hmm.
I was born.
Mm.
And so not that that means everything, but just the timing of when his grandfather was leaving is the time that I came in.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's interesting, the first name I can remember is that one. Now you can ask me questions so I can follow with your time.
Okay, well, we have plenty of time tonight because tonight's show program is specifically dealing with this issue, and we want to pay tribute, of course, to both the elder and the younger, but we definitely want to shed some other light on what has happened this week, May 9th, of course, in Mexico. There were so many different reports that we heard, one being that Brother Malcolm was shot, another that he was thrown from a roof, and then finally that he was beaten to death. So, you know, there are still areas that are unclear and will probably be unclear at least until we can see for ourselves some of the documentation that we need to see. And even at that, you know, it still doesn't mean that that's the accurate truth either, but it will at least give us a little more to go with. You, of course, know some of the initiatives and the work that Brother Malcolm was doing. Tell us a little bit about that, because, you know, we often hear about what happened when he was 12, what happened when he was 18 or 15, but we are not hearing
that in the bud. What we know is that from the time that before this boy could walk, that boy's mama had an FBI file because that boy's grandfather had an FBI file, and Malcolm had an FBI file as a child, I suspect, because that's how deep this thing goes. So this boy's mama had a file. When Betty was pregnant with babies, you know that they were watching her pregnancy because they knew when to attack the Shabazz house in 1958 or 59 when they tried to kill Malcolm X, that first major assassination attempt by the New York police. So we're dealing with a family that they have been trying to stomp out and destroy for the better part of 100 years. And so with that in mind, I don't take nicely to anything that they say about this boy because these people are casualties of Anglo-America's war to destroy African-American people. So what? He punched a window. These people on Wall Street have smashed more windows and plowed under homes that people could be living in and gave people subprime loans, and they're going to cry about a broken window? They can all go to hell as far as I'm concerned. And I mean that. And that's for the little Negroes who need white people to respect them. They don't respect anybody who doesn't have power and the coercive force to demand it. So had this boy been as sweet and nice as he could be, he could be shot dead just as fast in the street in his home like Romali Graham, where they just lit off. So let us dispense with this polite, there's a nice way to be enslaved in America. There's no such thing. Now, having gotten that off my chest, Malcolm Shabazz, after having been set up to be put in a situation where he'd probably be molested and abused when they tried to get his mother in on this situation where they implanted Mr. Fitzgerald, a racist Zionist Jew FBI agent, to get the family to do something to Mr. Farrakhan that could get other people in the Shabazz family killed. They planned to have a whole bunch of people killed. This government did it, and they used our tax money, not money for school lunches or milk or for training, but to get black people to kill each other because we exist. So imagine that. This boy comes at 5 and understands the whole state is against him. You tell me how many folks can handle when they see Chi versus the people of the United States against Chi. Can you imagine that, Philae? Nobody want to see that. Well, that's what went against this boy. And they beat that, and they come back with something else. So they put the mama in jail, and they do all this kind of stuff. The boys bounced around. And by the way, there were agent provocateurs at Princeton. They had agents. If you read O'Reilly's book, Racial Matters, they had people to harass Malcolm's mother when she was in college to make her feel uncomfortable, to make people hate her. So she goes to France, finds an Algerian who's persecuted. They have a relationship. And then she's in trouble because, oh, my God, the daughter of Malcolm X fell in love, and now, you know, you hear Diana Ross, the Supreme, singing Love Child. She's pregnant. Oh, how could she do that? And what some people were saying is kill it. Kill it. It's legal. And she decided to have it. And you see, we have to remember, Kibbalah is a sensitive daughter. Kibbalah is the apple and was the apple of Malcolm X's eye. Kibbalah was the one that saved the family from being roasted alive. Kibbalah was front and center when 30 bullets went into her father. She's the one that didn't forget. You know, Betty Shabazz, peace be upon her, wonderful woman, she wasn't the radical that Malcolm was. I'm not attacking this. Everybody has the right to be who and what they are.
Right.
But those children had a very, very middle-class upbringing. And Kibbalah, the disconnect from going from your house being set on fire and your dad being killed and living in Mount Vernon and going to international school, then going to Princeton, everybody wants you to wear combat boots and say kill Whitey. The people saying that to her, they've never been through what her family been through. She didn't grow up with her grandmother, who was still in a mental institution that she didn't probably get to meet. Right? She never met the grandfather. He was long gone. She didn't have, most of them didn't have families where sisters and brothers were pitted by the FBI to have their own family members killed. Imagine that. And Betty raised them separate from the littles who are down in Georgia, which could have been a source of strength or love. They didn't have that. So this boy comes into the whirlwind of challenges, dysfunctions. Betty upset that Malcolm didn't grab more for the family because folks were grabbing in the nation. I'm not picking, but some folks were grabbing. And so this boy comes along, and man, and then the mother, imagine, we know about job discrimination. Kibbalah Shabazz, aren't you Malcolm X's daughter? Can you imagine how odd it would have been working even if they gave her a job? If she halfway cut her eyes at someone white, oh, she's militant like her father. I mean, imagine the trying to live down folks who, there are lots of people who celebrated Malcolm X being killed in 1965. I can assure you, and I think you remember, white people, the sale of beer went up when Martin Luther King was killed. One of my mother's best friends, a woman named Mary Lanier, divorced her husband because his family came over to celebrate Martin Luther King being killed. She was so sick, she walked out of the house and never came back. She's a white one, just can't handle this much hate. Imagine the hate that these people in the Shabazz family feel. The New York Times, the world's most important paper, calling their father an apostle of hate and celebrating him dying. That being all on the television. That being, if she had a history book and he was mentioned, imagine how they depicted her father. And imagine all the people who were loyal to the nation that didn't like them as being troublemakers. So this family is in a whirlwind, and they have suffered. So this boy comes into a very, very difficult life, a family with very few men, six women, no granddaddy, none, no grandmother. So they didn't have a whole lot. So it's just them against the world. Then people came in, but some people say Percy Sutton, who did a lot for them, was a snitch and a spy, some folks say. So even the people showing love and help and acting as a family attorney may have been there to make certain that there were no more Malcolm X's. So you name this boy that you have under the circumstance that many people said, don't have that girl. And you name him for the most important black man that's lived in 500 years in a society where we haven't crushed the races that rule us. And the people who plotted his father's death, black and white, are prominent, powerful, and important in places of influence. And how did we really expect this to turn out if we didn't all surround them like elephants surround their young elephants and say, me first, you got to get to me before you get to him? We didn't do that. We heard what these racist newspapers that called us niggers and coons. Remember the old newspapers that give the address, black man did so-and-so and the nigger lives at? And all of a sudden, we see a few black people in the ads and on television, and now we trust the same media that's based on coon shows and lynchings, and they depict this boy as a bad seed, worthy of death. And the same way we betrayed Tawana Brawley, the same way we've forgotten about Trayvon Martin, the same way we forget everything that requires that we stand with one another, we forgot about him and let this depict him. And then when this fire happened with the grandmother, Dick Gregory has information that contradicts what we were told. And the young man told me, the whole story hasn't been told. When Dick Gregory came out, one of the conversations I had with Malcolm, he was so happy that this came out. I mean, he was so relieved. Someone's finally going to, because remember, he made a deal with the state of New York. He can't come out and say he didn't do it to get the deal to keep him from spending the rest of his life in jail. And they tortured him psychologically when they arrested him. He should have had a lawyer. They tricked him like they did the Central Park Seven. They do it to grown men. He was a baby, and they did it to him. Then they put him in the psychiatric ward. And if you've ever had white folks evaluate you on the job or anything, no matter how together you are, you're crazy. So what did they do? What horrors, what nightmares must he have endured? Institutionalized. And if the family didn't get into what really happened to their mother, how much resentment must they feel against someone that some of them may have even felt shouldn't have been born? So where would his friends and his love and his associations come from? I want to tell you a story, a quick one. Last summer, around June, July, in that period, July, I got a call from, Ella Collins, his son. Mm-hmm. And I was trying to encourage him. I think Ronald Collins. Ronald, I've got Malcolm. He's a lot better than what people say. Much, much better. He needs you. He needs you, Ronald. If I had one other or two other black men that were solid, I'd have this. You're a family member. I could go so far with him if, please, Ronald. I begged him. And I said, Ronald, you guys abandoned him when he was 12. I'd be angry at the world, too. Do you understand what I'm saying, Philae?
Absolutely.
And Ronald told me, I love him. I said, Ronald, he needs you to tell him, but I'll tell him for you. But I hope you call me again. Please call me again. I don't know him. I've known him just 2 years. You could really, if you reached out to him, man, he never called me again. I never ever heard from him. Okay? Mm-hmm. But when I told Malcolm, your uncle or your cousin said that he loved you, Malcolm cried like a baby on my front porch.
Mm-hmm.
That's how much he hurt. That's how much he didn't feel loved. When you wonder why the Bloods or whoever reached out to him when he had been stigmatized. And we need to see Malcolm like we have understanding for these African child soldiers who are forced to have sex with their grandmothers and their mothers, which causes them to be ostracized from their clan. And these kids just go out and kill people because no one wants them. No one. They're forced to do it like he was forced to. And then everyone blames you for what you're forced to do. So where was he going to go? The church wouldn't want him. He's not a Christian, although he wasn't raised as a Muslim. But the people in church didn't reach out to him. So the Jesus people didn't want him. Muslims, well, you're supposed to, well, which group are you going to be in? You may not want to go back to the nation because there's a problem there. And then at the same time, you know, sort of came up Christian, so some of the Sunni stuff may not work for you. And he became Shia. Uh-oh. He's just like his grandfather, an independent thinker. He found Islam, but not the one that the family was in. And why would he find Islam in America that's been at war? I'm sorry, Shia Islam. Has been at war with the Shia since 1979. So when he seeks spirituality and solace, even that's no good. The country, he says, oh, we don't like that. You can't have that spirituality. And I'm like, damn, this boy can't do nothing right. He can't have anything. You know, it's interesting. So you institutionalize him, you put him in jail. From one of my understandings is they put him in a place where the white prisoners could mistreat him. We also need to remember that his mother had him live in many instances in places where a large number of the kids weren't black. So you've had this kid bounced around between families, sort of raising a little bit of himself because his mom had some issues. I'm not going to attack her. They have the right to have issues. Anyone that loves the family, I'm not attacking. I feel nothing but hurt and compassion for the family. So I hope this doesn't come across as I'm putting mom down. These people have been attacked by the state before they were born. And we black folks, it seems as if we only have sympathy for human suffering when it happens to our family. You don't care if it happens to your neighbor. You don't care if it's somebody across the street or someone in Africa or the victims of the earthquake in Haiti who are still suffering, or Congo, or for that matter, New Orleans, or Camden, or Trenton, or Detroit, or Cleveland, or Compton, or Anacostia, or North Philly, or Roxbury, or Dorchester. We don't care as long as we're doing okay. There was a congressman from Indiana, and he said the only thing black people cared about was a warm place to have a bowel movement and some skin-tight sex. They called them racist. But sometimes they're the ones that want to tell how the worst in us is. The worst in us, he got it. The problem is they never see the best in us either. So this boy has all of this. He's hurt. He's hated. He was made into a monster by the greatest media machine the world has ever seen. We're talking about a victim of black, white, and gray propaganda. Look it up on Wikipedia. I'm not going to explain it. They have already assassinated this boy at the age of 5. I thank God he lived another 23 years, and I was one of those people that got to know him. They already killed him, and the black community are frightened and upset that whites didn't like Malcolm's grandson, who wasn't like the mature man that didn't get to live to be 40. We turned our back on him long time ago. And it just so happened Spike Lee's movie and some young people who halfway liked what they thought and the rappers and the others who kept Malcolm X's words and images out there gravitated to him. Some of them were in gangs, but you know what? The Wall Street people are gangs. The Federal Reserve is a gang. The Masons is a gang. Republicans are a gang. I mean, we got nothing but gangs.
That's right.
Gangs everywhere. The Heritage Society is a gang. The Ku Klux Klan is a gang. The Fraternal Order of the Police is a gang. You know, I always say to people, I love black gangs. I just hate who they fight.
Mm-hmm.
We all need to be in the gang and fight the right people. The origin of black gangs was self-defense long before there were Black Panthers or anything else. So the fact that the boy wanted to be in solidarity with other black men in prison who didn't want to be picked off one at a time, how come they have so much more sophistication and consciousness than we educated Negroes who've never been behind bars? So anybody come and say something to me about him being a blood, sure enough. Did you get him out of jail? Did you raise him? Did you send something to him? And, of course, if you're in jail, what does that make you? If you're not a criminal, you'll come out one. Jails aren't made to reform people. They may still be called penitentiaries. They should be called sodomy factories, criminal production lines. To reinforce that there isn't a criminal streak in you because you can't get a job. What happened in Philly today when the people came out looking for work, people who've been set up and framed and destroyed by the society, criminalized by this racist, apartheid, neo-Nazi, fascistic American system? These black men are still willing to work minimum wage jobs. They called the cops and the dogs on them today in Philadelphia. Am I lying or am I telling the truth? They shut it off, and they'll lie and say black men don't want to work, and they'll lie and say that Malcolm didn't want to be any better. They should be shown how. So this boy is traumatized, abused. For all we know, I could never get Malcolm. He just wouldn't let me touch that wound. So Malcolm, I want you to talk to somebody. I don't want you to use anything, but Malcolm, you need to unpack whatever they did in those years, because it, if you hold on to it, it won't let you move ahead. It'll keep tripping you up. And it seemed as if Malcolm sensed it, but he's so hurt by this, he was afraid to open up to tell people. Well, I hope nothing sexual happened. I hope no psychotropic drugs or no beating. I hope. But isn't that what they do in those places to people? I'm so tired of all these strong, arrogant black women abusing men coming out of these institutions, supermax jails, acting like there's not a spiritual scratch on their soul. It's a damn lie. And they went in as men, he went in as a baby. So let's move through that. Somehow, in his teens, he began to get a grasp on himself. And when he came out, one of the things he did was he found a way to get himself into John Jay College. What did he want to study? He wanted to study law to help other people. That's at the height of a point. You know how confused I was at 20? I told you something stupid I did when I was 22 or 23. And that's with both of my parents and my grandparents and coming up in church. I did dumb stuff. I can't imagine how well he handled this stuff. He handled it well. We attack our young men and women, and we never acknowledge the hell and the confusion and the Satanism of this Illuminati-driven Zionist-controlled society. And if you don't have anybody to hold on to when the whirlwinds of oppression are blowing, you end up caught up. He got into school, and if what he said to me is correct, it seemed as if there was an ambivalence towards sharing the family resources to advance his education. What he said, if I take him at his word, when I tried to do good, people ignored me. When I got into trouble, that's when I got attention. How many girls have gotten pregnant because they wanted attention? How many boys and girls do all kinds of strange and aberrant drug behavior, sex cults, because they need some attention or need to belong, or get in a gang and shoot some anonymous person because they need to belong to something? Remember, his grandmother's gone. Who would want to be his play grandmother after what they had been told about him? Who'd want to be his play grandfather? Who wants to be a charcoal briquette for some sociopathic kid who hates people that love him? That's the way that he's been casted. Do you understand what I'm saying? Man, imagine caring that when people look at you and you say, dude, are you the one that barbecued your grandmother? I mean, that's the first thing people would say. I could see the look in his face. I have to prepare myself that people see me as a person who sets old women on fire. And we know how much the black community and every community loves grandmothers. So that's the greatest killing of all, is killing grandmother or a baby. Although we have abortion, we're getting around to euthanasia. Pretty soon they'll be killing grandmothers, especially if we keep Obama. I said it. I hope you Obama people don't like me. I don't care. Back to Malcolm. He gets into school, and he tries, and he makes some advances, lacks of support, starts trying to figure out ways to support himself, and he never quite gets back to the college, but he wanted. The whole trip to Iran was to go back to school. Now, some other things happened. He got in trouble once or twice, but if folks are gunning for you, and he had an anger management problem, yes, he did, I'd be angry too. I have an anger management problem, and I've never been through 1% of what this guy went through. I know a whole lot of folks with attitudes just because they're full of the devil these days. So Malcolm has he worked on the anger. He worked on it. Now, Malcolm got in trouble, but the last time he really, really had any issue was 10 years ago. Now, something happened in 2006. It's not that important. And breaking a store window, I mean, at least he didn't smash the whole thing. And have you ever been in a store where people are racist and rude and you want to do something? I didn't do it, especially with somebody Asian or one of the foreign people that really pushed the white supremacy thing. They're not even white. They got all their rights off our movement, off his grandfather, and then they're going to talk to a prince of the movement like that? So mm-hmm. I could feel that. Now, I want to say a little bit more. He began to talk to people. One of the things that happened, Malcolm had a chance to have a lot of money. He had a book deal. He had a book deal with a publisher. Mm-hmm. And when the Satanic Verses came out, he and his company that had given him the book deal had supported the Salman Rushdie book that attacked Islam. Malcolm cut ties with that company, losing a huge advance that he would have had. He seemed to really be committed to his faith, even if he had issues, other types of things. I know a lot of folks, if you had made Jesus out to be eating cow doo-doo, and they were getting paid, I don't care what kind of Pentecostal Baptist they were, they'd stay at the same place. In fact, most Negroes would work at a concentration camp killing other blacks as long as they got the weekends off to spend their money with people who hate our guts. Let's be real. Oh, we got nice uniforms where the blacks, they're just gassing them. Well, they were going to die anyway. They bring them in nice cars. They got white wheel tires, Rolls Royce engine. The scream is not too loud because it's soundproof. I know black folks who could rationalize every single one of us being killed as long as they were okay. Malcolm took the loss of the money and never got another publisher because he's been blackballed by you know who. We're not going to say it, but you know who runs publishing. They wanted to use that boy to be on their roster to sign off, and he didn't sign off on attacking his religion. I'm a Christian. I have to respect him standing by his faith. He may have not have done everything right as a Muslim, but I certainly haven't done everything right as a Christian. I'm not supposed to look at some stuff. I've seen some porn. I'm not supposed to look at that as a Christian. Be careful, eyes, what you see. And my eyes got real big. Looked again. I'm not supposed to do that. I started to be a minister. I'm just trying to be honest that all have sinned and come short of the glory of God. That's what I believe. So as a Christian, I'm not going to sit up and judge this brother. Now, some other things about Malcolm. Malcolm was very good, a good public speaker. People gravitated to him. I could walk around, and Malcolm would walk up to people out of jail, homeless people, just touch them. He had this gift. He didn't even understand it. I would tell him, boy, you don't even understand what you have. I said, I see it. And he had mixed feelings about speaking publicly. He sort of liked being able to help people, but didn't like Michael Jackson. I don't like being famous, so because other people come up and want you to sign stuff or do that. And he had a weakness. He liked women, but in an age where we celebrate sorry non-basketball playing folks who catch more balls off court and probably dribbling with the arch hand, thank God for the brothers that still like women. Thank you. And you should say thank you, too. I mean, all these women, all the men are gay, but thank God for the ones that aren't. Stop whining and get one on the street. Stop being so stuck up. Or the white women, and the others will get them. And the gays will be after them. Because if you don't need Viagra, they're ready to travel. So this man liked the ladies. Maybe in his socialization, mostly in incarceration after the age of 12, needed some social graces. I've had these discussions. When Malcolm was in jail and he was all alone, some female kept writing him, they have a child. I don't know the age of the child. It's a girl. There's an allegation that there's another child, but given all the babies that are being killed, thank God he got his two on before they took him out. There's rumors that there are two more. Well, thank God he got more than two, because I don't have any. And there are a whole bunch of people like Jason Carmen that ain't making none. Thank God for Malcolm. Maybe one of those four is going to do something. Anything close to what this boy did without the complications would be a major contribution to our people. Somebody say amen.
Amen. So, amen. So, I say.
Do you understand what I'm
Brother
saying?
Andy,
so, Malcolm, yes, go for it.
I want
it.
You to hold that point right there because I want to bring Chairman Fred in now. You know, you touched on a couple of things, and I'm sure that Chairman Fred will be able to expound on them as well on his end. But I want to bring him in because I don't want to lose him because I think he was on a little while ago, and I think I lost him, so I see him back on now. So I want to bring him in. But you hold your point because we're coming back to you as well, and you stay right there because I still got you on live. I'm just going to bring Chairman Fred in as well. Chairman Fred, we got you, brother. You there?
I'm here, Empress.
All right. Give thanks. Much love.
I'm gonna preface. First of all, greetings to you and the fellow panelists. I'm on a cell phone. I don't know how much juice I have left on the cell phone. So, I'm here with you now.
Okay, I got you. Yeah, I saw you on early, and then you disappeared. So that's why I said, let me get you real quick right now. Okay, well, as you can hear, Brother Randy is putting it out there, you know, spitting it, as they say, and we certainly appreciate that. You know, he's shedding some light on, you know, some of the things that we've heard, of course, and seen in the media, but he, of course, has provided us with information that we need to know about Brother Malcolm. You, of course, attended the Going Home services today. Before you tell us about that, you want to chime in on anything that you've heard while you were holding on?
In all honesty, Empress, I just caught last minute, Brother Dr. Randy Short, just caught it like last 30 seconds a minute. I just caught the
end. Okay. All right. Okay, so we'll go back to that, and if your phone holds up, then we'll kind of revisit that and, you know, bring you back into that particular dialogue. But tell us about today. You know how things went, and just give us your observation or your feelings about it.
Well, we were fortunate to be make it down here to Oakland, California, in order to show our respects in regards to the homegoing ceremony for Malcolm Shabazz. Mm-hmm. It was at the mosque downtown Oakland. And it was, you know, pretty much, in particular, from the Muslim community, the old home ones, you know, various imams, you know what I'm saying, gave different statements. His mother was present. And several of them from the community were there. So, again, we were honored to be able to, you know, make our presence there. And still right now, we had a repass, or to say, lack of better terms, we still there right now. That the community, that the people in general, we came over, POCC, BPPC, we came on some other forces, coalition of forces from Los Angeles and different parts of the country. We came, just had a gathering, just to really, in basic layman terms, chop it up, you know what I'm saying, with those from the community who knew Malcolm Shabazz, and just even to really put some, you know, talk about things in political context. And, you know what I'm saying, talk about some of the ever-emerging questions that are being raised and such terms, the whole thing about COINTELPRO and its, you know, in the proper context. In fact, it's a common term being used now, which is known as now INTELPRO, which is basically to say, you know what I'm saying, really fast forward, you know, so people can look at this whole thing with this counterinsurgency in a real deal way and make it applicable to the everyday situation we're going through, whether it be, again, as I said before, situation in the streets or the hip-hop or even the present-day assassinations of, you know what I'm saying, so many forces, and, you know what I'm saying, as well as that the case of Malcolm Shabazz.
Tim Fred, has there been, to your knowledge, any additional information that's been provided? We did learn that supposedly two Mexican people were arrested that supposedly be connected with the beating. You know, we've heard that the autopsy has indicated that Brother Malcolm died as a result of trauma, body, and, of course, broken ribs and things of that nature. Has been. And we're going to go back to Dr. Randy shortly, but we also got a report that the beating that he sustained looked like that similar to Emmett Till. So I don't know if today, and you can tell us if today's services, was it closed casket? Were you able to view the body? What can you tell us about any of that?
It was closed. It was the service. It was closed casket. I'm not sure as to any as you know more of the updated parts of any information that the community is getting. But I do know what I do see with this inference is a furthering of a meeting of the minds, and all what I mean by that is you're seeing a mergers of different forces who are kind of was like cutting the fat from the meat. In other words, people who from different communities who even acknowledge COINTELPRO or even address this whole thing about the counterinsurgency, you're seeing more coalitions dealing with different forces, you know what I'm saying, throughout the country. And this whole case is has been pivotal, and again bring a meeting of the minds of those of like minds, who either those who we refer to the progressive community who can break down terms about counterinsurgency, so on and so forth, or again those from the late, those just in the streets. You see, there were a number of people who we had conversations with after the funeral, just common brothers and sisters. You seeing some points of unity and people. And people are really again pressing and urging and calling some calling some contradictions, raising some questions. Because some people say, well, they took the position that this the whole thing with the service today was. Some people took the position that this was going to be the intent for this was to actually just have the homegoing service and do that. But after that, again, you've seen different forces start coming together to raise some questions together again with this. We cannot talk about, as I said earlier, basically we cannot talk about the case of the death of Malcolm Shabazz without negating the fact that this is Malcolm X's grandson, negating the fact that his grandfather and his family, we talked about some of us even went so far as talking. Wait a minute, even Malcolm X, his father, his biological father, what happened to his father, and the whole history of attacks that have been waged on African people in general, but this family.
Right.
So again, shaking that bridle of a liberalism off, shaking that muzzle off, saying, wait a minute, let's ask these questions. So again. So I don't know when I'm supposed to head back out of opening, because again, there's some heated conversations, some good conversations that are being raised, not only in Oakland but throughout the streets of New York, Detroit, so on and so forth.
When we were talking, Brother Andy and I the other day, we kind of both agreed that from Brother Malcolm's death, it seems that there is something that is arising. It's unfortunate that it took this to happen, but nevertheless, we could feel that there's an energy or a synergy that is occurring, and it's forcing us to pay close attention, to become even more perhaps proactive in what we're doing. His death is making us be more responsible. Let's put it that way. And we must do that. We must do that.
And not to seem as a pessimist, and that's true, but also we got to be really on point that we don't become that it's not limited to be just a reactionary response. Because in so many cases, when you see a heightening of the consciousness, response to such cases of this assassination, you see people start to ask certain questions. A lot of times, the system takes a position as what Malcolm X himself articulated. When they can't stop it, they will attempt to co-opt it, ward it down, change
right.
it, make it
That's
make
right.
it something they need to be. So it really got to be on point, again, to not become, and what I refer to is the sidetracking of the slave, to really remain objective, scientific, again, taking it, and also not just have, again, not a reactionary response, because a lot of us are coming in late to the game with this whole thing. And I tell people, I say, if we attempt to talk about this, the assassination of Malcolm Shabazz, negating the history of the COINTELPRO, negating the fact that he's a grandson of Malcolm X, El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz, one of the most defiant symbols against U.S. imperialism, is equivalent to talking about African people being in the United States, negating that of the chattel slavery.
That's right. We want to take a quick moment to remind everyone that the chat room is open. You are welcome to go there to have your dialogue, to ask some questions if you may. We still have Dr. Randy Short on as well, Chairman Freed, and what we're going to do is take a caller. We have a couple of folks that have some questions or some comments, and I'd like for both of you to be there to hear this, because we wanted to do this program tonight so that our family could have this dialogue, so that we could have a dialogue together, because, you know, our brothers and sisters need to be able to voice what they feel and, you know, what they think should happen and so forth. So we're going to have a couple of callers in. Caller, you're at 9718. That's the last 4 digits of your number. Do you have a question or comment for us tonight?
Yes, assalamu alaikum, Sister Empress.
Alaikum. Yes, sir.
Peace be on to you and your esteemed guest. I learned so much just from listening. This is Brother Philip Muhammad.
Hey, Brother Philip.
Hey, what's going on, Sister Soldier?
All right.
And thank you so much for inviting me to listen to this and to be edified by the wisdom of our brothers here. You know, I am so thankful for what you all imparted. You know, a lot of us didn't know the story of our brother, you know, and we really are looking for the facts. And I just want to basically just say some things just, you know, really quick. You know, our people, when we were attacked in Africa, so-called Africa, and dragged over here, many of our tribes, according to what I've read, were actually disputing amongst each other. And today we see a reoccurrence of that in the fact that we're getting picked off in the media. We're getting picked off on various levels by our open enemy while we sit in chat rooms and in Facebooks and all these other social medias debating over that which we know not while our people are under attack. You know, and it's just sad. You know, I'm sitting here just looking at it. I'm like, we are under attack. And we know this, you know, we who are on the front lines. But what is it going to take? I mean, our children are missing by the millions at this point all over the world. The pornography and child pornography is attached to all the wickedness that we are up against. But because of the deals that I see that we have been making on an individual basis with Satan, we can't even find time to deal with our open enemy because we're in love with him. You know, the Honorable Elijah talked about that. He talked about how our people suffer because we actually love the enemy more than we love ourselves. And then we try to play this role like we pro-black, but we really pro-white. And I don't mean the skin color. I mean what's in between all of that, what's under all of that, you know, which is white supremacy, this mindset that is attacking us, and we're not doing anything but debating. It doesn't make any sense. We are at war. Now, there's action being taken. Like we have on change.org, there's a petition that that is out right now to force the government, Barack Obama and Attorney General Eric Holder, to release the files on Malcolm X. You know, because like Bro was saying earlier, there's case files on the whole family. You know, and this false depiction of this false love that's perceived for Malcolm X and for Brother's family by the media, it's got to be busted up. Because if our open enemies had any caring for Malcolm, Martin, they would open up these case files. So I'm saying to all the listeners and everybody who's listening, we need to sign this petition. It's on change.org, and it deals, and it's very simple. Just go to change.org and keyword Attorney General Eric Holder and President Barack Obama release the files, release the Malcolm X files. Or, you know, just keyword release the Malcolm X files and sign that petition, because we really need to do something, even if it's just signing a petition. But I see our people sitting on their hands, brothers and sisters, and it's not making me tired. I've been on the front lines for a long time, and I know you have too, sister, you know. And I just wanted to say that because we can't rewrite it. We can't relive history over again and watch our people get slaughtered while we point fingers at each other. You know, I just think that I just felt that needed to be said, you know, and I thank you again for sharing, you know, just sharing all your wisdom, brothers, you know, much respect to y'all and you as well, sister.
All right, Brother Phil. Well, thank you very much. I'm going to let Brother Randy comment,
yes,
if he will, and then, of course, Chairman Freer. But thank you, my brother.
Yes,
ma'am.
Brother Randy?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead.
I want to say that this brother's right on point. There's even another petition calling for a full investigation, calling for that Sister Lady of Judah, Rosalind Ratcliffe Cross, wrote. So there, these petitions, we need to support them, but we actually need to get out to the streets, and in particular, what we do out in the streets, we need to boycott. We need to boycott Taco Bell. We need to stop buying from these people. We need to stop buying. Mm-hmm. That's the one thing that all the folks, we continue to buy from people who hate us. We give them the money to buy the rope and the bullets to shoot us with and the rope to hang us. It is time for us to stop paying them to wipe us out. So this brother's right. I also, you mentioned this, I'm going to put your intellectual property out there. We need to demand that the file on Malcolm Shabazz be released, not just by this government, but by the government of Syria, by the government of every place that he's been. We need to know who's spying on them and what, and we need all of our black political prisoners and even the other people freed. This is a time to get Mamiya out.
Mm-hmm.
We need to say, you killed Malcolm, Obama, you devil. We want Asada off of this list now, or we're going to stay home and the Democrats are going to lose. There are less than 2 million Cubans in this country, maybe if there's 1.5 million. There are 45 to 50 million of us. There is no way that that little bit of votes count so much that that little dude who wants to call and French kiss and congratulate every homosexual that he knows can turn his back on us. We need to stop being pimped by him. And by the way, I do not care who likes Obama out there. He's a plague and an embarrassment to our race, to our ancestors, and we're idolatrous worshiping him and turning our backs on the Most High. So this brother's right. We need to do everything that we can do. Everything that we can do. Do you know what I'm saying? I remember when I lived in a dorm room with a bunch of racists at the University of Virginia, and they just completely disrespected us. Everything I could do to fight them back. One guy told me that having blonde hair was a superior hair, and he was a brunette. So I put peroxide in their shampoo. Everybody started turning blonde. I said, y'all getting better every day. Every chance I had to do something, if they left some shoes out, I'd crazy glue them to the floor. Couldn't put them up. If they left a book out, I took it to the commissary soda, took my friends out to eat. We need to fight them with every means. This is what made the slave system difficult. That's why they had nigger shoes and nigger hose. Blacks would break the tools, wear out their shoes, tear up their clothes. Microaggressive ways to stop the system. What we're doing is we're not even resisting. We're like in free fall. Instead of saying, you know what, I'm not going to do this, I'm not going to do that, I'm not going to cooperate with this, I'm not going to follow some idiot Punchinello like T.D. Jakes if he doesn't speak up about Malcolm. I'm going to stop giving at my church if I've got some preacher who's more interested in the boys in the choir loft than the self-determination of my people. We need to go after and we need to punish our traitors. In South Africa, any other place, freedom, you go after your traitors first. They're the low-hanging fruit of freedom. And so, brother, it's not just going for the people high up. What's your pastor doing? What's your ANC doing? What is your family doing? You know, it's taken me a while, but I turned my mother against Obama. Everybody I can. Turn against everything. We need to be arguing with friends. We don't want to watch E-SPAN. We should be turning our backs on everything in this society that doesn't support us. That includes artists. If that little silly chick, Beyonce, if they went over there to spy on Asada, if we find this to be true, or Jay-Z, we should burn their records, burn their posters. We should be against anything, any institution, as long as they have two bricks stuck together. We should be against it.
All right. Chairman Fred?
Well, Mike, hey, the phone lines are hot.
They are.
The petition. I was not even. familiar with the petitions that the brother spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
But however, this is a. But I just want this is again a statement to the myriad, the number of things that are arising within the community, the things that are the discussions that are arising, and how people are responding. You know, again, this calling the question about, again, struggling to put this in some political context, like even people even saying about calling the files to be opened, and you're talking about a community that at one time, some people may have been, naive to believe, like, okay, well, they don't have any files on us. What do you mean? Who has some files on us? And but you see a heightening of the conscience of the community. In fact, I think Lenin has said that what takes people 20 years to learn in ordinary times, they can learn in 2 years in revolutionary times. And this type of it's phenomenal. So again, to give credit to the community, to the people, where they are calling these questions, and we're going to see the system, we're going to see the state who thinks long range. They're going to try to come up with some concessions, whether it be like even in regards to assassinations of such forces as Malcolm X, where they would try to they would say, okay, there was certain they would acknowledge that there was certain individuals, and they would give their names, so they were involved in the case. Or we see in Chicago with the torture of black men, black boys and girls in Chicago, in which a major player was a former lieutenant Chicago Area 2 Chicago Police Department, John Burge. However, the state was with say, okay, well, he was involved in it, but the people said no. Not only those individuals who pulled a trigger with Malcolm X, no, not only the individual who applied the electroshock tools to the private parts to those black boys and girls, and not only if the case be with these two individuals they talked about in Mexico that were probably involved in assassinating Malcolm Shabazz, but the people to take a position which was articulated by Frantz Fanon, Algerian theoretician, who said we will accept their concessions, however, not compromise our principle. So even with the brother mentioned on the phone call earlier, talking about the demand of opening files, these are the type of phenomenal discussions that you see happening within inside our community. Let's talk about the whole thing about COINTELPRO. Let's widen the discussion about this intensified attack placed on the head of Assata Shakur. Let's widen the discussion about the cases of Marshall Eddie Conway, Mumi Abu-Jamal, Sunday Adekola, Rochelle Sekou McGee, the Move 9, and so many other victims of the vicious U.S. COINTELPRO that was and is continued to be waged in our community. So, again, it brings it home. It's like I think the term the government uses, I think they call it backdraft or backwash or something like that, where it flies back in their face. Where when they make a move on assassinations, okay, people say, wait a minute, let's not only talk about this situation, let's talk about the general protocol, the general practice that has been and is continued to be enacted upon our community. So these are the type of discussions that we need to be that need to be happening. And again, I want to commend the community, the people. Raising these type of questions and utilizing such venues as social media, so on and so forth, to make it work in the interest of the people. Say, okay, let's spread the word about these petitions. Let's call them questions, not just the individual case of Malcolm Shabazz, but the whole entire continuing counterinsurgency that was, is, and if it's in their hands, that will be continuing to be waged upon our people.
Okay, we're going to go back to our lines, callers. You have our lines lit up. We thank you for holding. We're going to go to take another call. Caller, you're at 3787. We're going to catch you in right about now. Do you have a comment or question for us tonight?
Yes. Hey, sister, this is Dr. Issa. Greetings to
Brother
Fred. I have a question to Brother Fred. I kind of tuned in about 20 minutes ago, and I wanted to know about what will happen. Was there any announcement at the funeral that the family will come out and make a statement or ask questions, a public statement or questions, and will there be a memorial service in New York City, if you know.
Yes, brother. Dr. Issa, I didn't hear any position taken about, you know, regards to a statement that is to be made by the family in the future. I'm not sure if there's a memorial set to be, you know what I'm saying, in New York. So, I can't answer those questions. Again, as I said earlier, I do know that, you know, upon, you know, departure from the funeral, that just, you know, amongst the people, you know what I'm saying, again, it was like a general conversation amongst the people, you know what I'm saying, after the funeral, talking about, you know what I'm saying, like, you know, what really happened to Malcolm Shabazz. And not only Malcolm Shabazz, you've seen, we cannot negate the fact that, in fact, we on the heels on the upcoming birth date of Malcolm X.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
It's like in some sense people say it was kind of like a eerie message that the state was sending, you know,
mm-hmm.
to receive news about the death of Malcolm Shabazz days prior to the birth date mm-hmm. of his grandfather Malcolm X. So people, even a reemerging discussion going on now about even Malcolm X, like, you know, some people who just, so, I mean, sad to say, some people even dismissed his case. Is, you know what I'm saying,
mm-hmm.
a case of just, you know, I hate to use this term because we disagree with this term, what some people refer to as black-on-black crime, but you even see a discussion now where people saying, well, man, about the whole thing about COINTELPRO, counterinsurgency, and, you know what I'm saying, and various tactics that have been, you know, waged to not only wipe out our leadership, but just, you know what I'm saying, just to damp down on our people in general.
Right. One last question. On Facebook, on the memorial page, there have been several inputs by Mexican Americans, and some of them have
mm-hmm.
called for unity. For instance, there's one, and I'll be real brief, where a guy by the name of Jose Lopez, who's indigenous, this is what he had to say, which I thought was kind of interesting. He said, "So what do Mexican people as a whole have to do with Malcolm's death is what I ask. Many Mexicans have been killed by black thugs, so should I blame all black people for the actions of a few idiotic thugs? Being mad at the whole group of people because of death of one person is idiotic because the Mexican community is not to blame. I believe that the people that did this and possibly the Mexican and U.S. government is who you should direct your anger to." And I just want to get you and Randy's input on that conversation. Thank you.
Let me come in first.
Yes.
It's very interesting how everybody wants unity and peace when black people are violated.
Mm.
Okay.
Mm.
Mexican people chose which side of the issue they want to be on when Jim Crow segregation in schools were ended, and they accepted going from non-white to white in the 1950s. They've accepted being with white people. Now, they are beef, and that's why when Mexican folks have a problem, I'm speaking of one specific group, I don't get so worked up, not because I'm for injustice against them, but to me, I call it white-on-white crime. You identify as white, they're white, why are you talking to me? If two Klansmen shoot each other, I may go out and get me some RC Coke. I'm not going to get involved. So, you know, this whole thing about unity, why don't they stop killing folks in Compton? Why doesn't the Mexican mafia stop being with the Aryan nations and murdering black prisoners across the country? That's when they want to kill a black man in jail. They'll get killed faster by them than by the Aryans. Now, what's up with that? And what's up with the Mexican government not counting blacks in the census? And what's up with the president, the last one that made this comment, Vicente Fox, that blacks needed to be replaced? He's calling on the U.S. government to do slow eugenics on our people and replace us with folks from his country, where his 6 or 7% white Spaniards oppress the predominantly non-white Mexican public. Their answer to their economic problem is the elimination of African Americans. And American whites link up with white Mexicans, and our folks are squashed. Even Malcolm's trip to Mexico, I would have never supported it. Why? Blacks can't get work and construction in cities that are predominantly black. So why are we fighting for the jobs of people who come to the country illegally when Malcolm himself, with a criminal record, had a hard time finding work? You know, we need to think about what coalitions we have. Now, I have a friend, and you know him from Howard University, Dr. Issa. His name is Dr. Don Davis, and you need to have him on your show one day. Don Davis grew up with Huey Newton, and the recreation of the Nation of Islam's What the Black Man Needs, that became the 10-point program for the Panthers, was written on his apartment floor. And what he shared with me, being an activist then, is that the last group, the blacks could win over everyone to support a coalition against injustice, except for the Mexicans. They could get white people more easily, because they know that they're in head-to-head competition for us for who replaces the Anglos as a power group. And they have no problem bumping us off, killing us and mistreating us. They identify as white. I have worked in sectors with that population and have watched how when one of them comes in, they begin lying and getting all the black folks fired, and they replace it with all their own folks. I'm not mad at them, but I'm sick of black folks saying I need to be united with someone that's going to stab me in my back. We need to tell those people, and you tell Jose and anyone else that writes you, when they get black folks in the census down there, when they acknowledge that it's black Mexicans that made Mexico free from Spain, maybe I'll talk to them. But they're liars, and they've benefited from our struggle. Look at any university that had a black student center. And once they began to let Latinos in, what did they do? They would take half of what was given to the blacks and give it to them. In fact, they feel entitled to whatever is ours goes to them. And I hate to say that, but that is the attitude. And so imagine all of us who's ever applied for anything as an African-American has been attacked for how we speak English. And now we get attacked for how we don't, how well we do or do not speak Spanish. There was a job fair the other day. My mother wanted me to go because I'm job hunting, like Dr. Isu. We're outspoken professors, so folks don't like us working. And I called up and found out what it was. I said, you know what, Mom, I speak Portuguese, but it won't be as good as someone raised in Brazil. And it won't matter. All my education won't count as much as a person with a bachelor's degree that's fluent in a language that very few people speak in the country. Imagine that. Now, they'll hire a person who can't speak English to work with an English-speaking group. And if we can speak some Spanish or some Portuguese or something else, that's not good enough because we're not fluent. This isn't the game that they started, but it's a game to their advantage. And what they're saying to you is, do not wake up as we take as much as we can for ourselves. And you see, I was talking to Philae about the man down in Texas who put dark stuff on his face to make himself look like he was black, and he's going around raping and killing people, and folks were harassing black men. These people understand the conflict between Anglo-Americans and African-Americans, because we're more than one nation in this country. And what they want to do is say, hey, look, the gays have used you. The Jews have used you. The ethnics in the union movement have used you. It's our turn. It's like the person on the cell block who gets screwed by everyone because they're weak. It's time for us to man up. I don't need any friends who won't fight for me. What happened to Malcolm in that bar is the future of our people. When it comes time to pay the bill, we'll die alone. He went in a coalition, and he died alone. Enough of this coalition. We need to be united amongst ourselves. And let me say something to you. The people who are funding this so-called Latino movement are not Latinos. I was working on the DREAM Act this summer under some very racist Jews and Asians who hate black people. And it was such a very negative experience for me. But I'm not going to get deep into it. These folks wouldn't even speak to you if you were black trying to get stuff for their kids to go to school. I mean, that's some deep stuff. But I won't even sign a petition for me to be in the country illegally because you're the wrong color. Ride the bus and folks get up and move. White folks don't even do that anymore. That's how deep this hatred is in Latin America, and we need to deal with this. In Brazil, they murder black folks every day. In Colombia, they murder people every day. They were killing them before Chavez came in. Let's deal with the fact that it's hell for black people south of the border or south of the North Pole, as Malcolm X told us, and they're the white people that do it to us. And they're coming up here. In fact, they're cowards. They're not strong enough to overturn the CIA or their white elites, so they come here and work for our white elites to crush us. Take over Mexico, then 97%, 93%? How hard is it to be? Now, here we are, 12, 14% expected to somehow achieve more than what they could do as 93%. It's, look, you imagine how many of them, because they outnumber us, all the drugs that come across the border, all the slavery, all the rapes like what happened in Ohio. Part of what upset them about that man is a black man that caught a Hispanic man catching white women. And it happens all over the country, but because the rich use their cheap labor, their white women and white kids and black women disappearing all over this country, and you wonder who's doing it? Who's most likely to commit a crime? A man that has no roots. So if you have a couple of thousand or a couple of million people with no women or families, if you get a little horny on or hard or your woody gets up, what are you going to do? You're going to attack one of the joggers going through the park. Well, they won't even know where to look for you. You have no address, and they don't talk to the police. And you know who's going to get blamed for it, a brother. They understand this. I worked in the job, and I know what it's like to constantly be lied on, my stuff stolen, and that happened to all the other black people. Areas of the economy, like waitering or parking, every place that black men could get into the economy. Once them, and some of the Africans know better, Ethiopians, other people, they do everything they can to drive black men out. And I've heard more racial comments about how lazy and dirty and stupid black people were from people in the country illegally. And I'm supposed to fight for their rights? I mean, and Jesse and all the other frauds out there who want to enhance their standing with the homosexuals and the Jews who run the Democratic Party, let them have a coalition. Let them have sex with them if they want. But leave us alone. Let black folks come together. And when we're strong and we're powerful, you know who we want to reach out to? The black people that are marginal that don't get out of the country to come here. I don't want to help the ones who identify as white. They want to be white. They want to be in death squads like what they do in El Salvador, where they murder hundreds of thousands of each other for the white minority. You can't be in a coalition with a person who hates their own people, who can't even acknowledge being part Indian and black. Or they'll sort of say they say the black get you to serve for them, but they won't do anything else for you. And so it's time for us to be honest about what it is that's going on there. Why is it that blacks in Mexico are the poorest people there? Why is it that blacks in Peru are the poorest people in Peru and in Bolivia and in Argentina and in Colombia, where they're doing genocide on blacks in Colombia and where they're doing, and do you get what I'm trying to say? Why? What makes them so appealing? After all, the lesson of Barack Obama is colored skin ain't enough. People with colored skin were willing to trade and sell and butcher us to get us over here. I don't care what you look like. What is your philosophy? What is your practice? What is your ideology? And if you implement it, and if your ideology is a simulation, which is part of Mestizaje, is about being a cosmic mixed race, that doesn't jive with our Pan-Africanism. It doesn't jive with black nationalism. And so what, and the Bible says, what fellowship does unrighteousness have with righteousness? What fellowship does self-determination have with the simulation? It has none.
All right. On that note, Dr. Issa, I think your question got answered. Did it not?
So, and just briefly, JR, I'll leave it at that. Any word about JR, I'm getting off. I'm listening.
Okay, before we go to that, because I want to hear that answer too, what I'd like to do is just take a quick break, just calm down for a moment, but not really, Brother Randy, so don't worry about it. I ain't trying to calm you down. I just want to just take a quick break for a minute, because what I'd like to do is share some of Brother Malcolm's words. Dr. Randy Short mentioned earlier some of the history of Brother Malcolm and, of course, some of the various things that some certainly did not know about, but also to put this in a context where we can examine various things that we may have heard or do know. But what I'd like to do is to show and let you all hear how Brother Malcolm responded to a question being raised. And I thought he did so in a very poignant way. This is when he was in Philadelphia a few months ago.
just to give you.
In his own words. Okay. We're going to go back to our lines and pick back up to where, Isa, you were asking Chairman Fred, I believe, a question or
yeah, I was asking him whether or not JR appeared at the funeral, and if he did, what was the atmosphere like?
Well, we were from several members of the community that he initially had appeared in the front of the building, and then suddenly left all of a sudden. That's the word we received from the community.
Regarding his possible knowledge of how Malcolm allegedly took the bus to Mexico? I mean, was there any discussion of how he got to Mexico?
Since my arrival in Oakland, non-restrained discussion and conversation amongst the community, that people initially were limited or liberal about asking certain questions. That is happening in all aspects of the community. You understand? So, it's early on, it was dealt with the liberalism. Regurgitating ruling class rhetoric. Again, regurgitating ruling class rhetoric. In other words, only asking the open worthy type of questions, the safe type of questions. But people are asking those questions again, but not being bothered to say, well, I want to ask this question about this particular person because they're quote unquote conscious. I want to question this because JR has interviewed some conscious people before. Or ask this question because I don't want to hurt anyone's feelings. So there's a barrage of questions. My only struggle is that it be objective, to be scientific. Because you're breaking new ground. Because you, it's like a in some sense of the words, a baby being born. You know, so you what Che Guevara said, the fight for the new man. I'm going to paraphrase that, the new man and the new woman. Because prior to this, there was another slave mindset. You know, so we only ask questions that don't press a lot of that really. The oppressor allowed for us to ask. And as we've been as you repeat themselves on the plantation, when a slave takes out the oppressor, the oppressor is gone, the new man is born. So people are calling those type of questions again. It's the question you just said, but they're asking them in a different type of way. You know what I'm saying? So they're asking them in a different type of way. So it's ever developing. I'm keeping my ear to the ground. I get our forces to keep our ear to the ground, and the people keep ear to the ground. And I'm definitely going to keep Empress updated, you updated, the people updated, as I receive more developments. Because prior to this, it was kind of demoralizing to hear some of the regurgitation from some people, even from those who call themselves progressive or conscious, because they were very liberal positions they were taking, where we don't want to say this or ask this. But now you see an emergence, you know what I'm saying, of a people saying, wait a minute, I may not understand words like COINTEL or counterinsurgency, but I'm going to ask this question. This doesn't make sense to me. How did this happen all of a sudden? So people are calling those questions. And again, it's moving a million miles a minute. As we say, what Lenin said, what takes people 20 years to learn ordinary times, they learn in 2 years of revolutionary times. So in essence, we will keep you updated as we receive more and more information.
All right. Wow.
Chairman Fred.
Yes, sir. That's
point of order, my brother. What I heard was when that brother heard that you were inside, he did Jesse Owens. He was like a Jesse Owens clone. And that's so, you know, and the scriptures say that the wicked flee when none pursueth. That's all I need. And I had said up on Facebook that he was trying to do what that manager did on the 5 Heartbeats. You saw that where he came in with the rose after he'd had the woman, Diane Carroll's husband, killed in the movie, go come to the funeral and cry and show out. And he slapped him. See, because you were there, we didn't have to see a 5 Heartbeats. I know he's seen the movie. He wanted to be like the crooked manager. And he is like the crooked manager trying to sell that book. I bet you if he has Malcolm's draws or something, he sold those up on eBay. I mean, this is some cynical, immoral. Yeah, I'm talking about it. I said it. Yes, I said it. Because, you know, we got to tell my other part of the story. But, yeah, we got
to
put.
Now,
we
I
have
think
some
what we need to do, just so that our listeners are clear, because we said the name J.R., but, of course, we know
it
who that
Jeff
is. Ryan. However, we need to give our family some clarity about who we're talking about and why.
Fred.
How much more airtime do we have?
Well, we got at least 20 minutes left.
Well, for the benefit of those who are not familiar with the caller calling and inquired about that being J.R. Valray, also known as Cleveland Valray, an individual who we at one time thought, well, let me preface it with this. I chair an organization in the Prison of Conscience Committee /BPPC, the Black Panther Party Cubs. We were under the impression that that J.R. Valray, at one time he represented himself as our Minister of Information for our organization on our Central Committee. And however, there were some extreme contradictions that he engaged in, and not only within our organization nationally, but internationally, and which after it was climaxed in regards around dealing with the case of, in fact, Malcolm. I can make this clear how it relates back to Malcolm Shabazz. When we had started to take in Malcolm Shabazz, in particular for the Legacy Tour, there was a tour, Legacy Tour that we supposed to took on in regards to talking about the case, the legacies of Malcolm X and also Chairman Fred, the whole history of COINTELPRO. Mm-hmm. We've seen this tour sabotaged intensely by the, you know what I'm saying, by state and the various apparatuses. And when this led to some investigations and for us to even do like a cleansing within our organization, and also to take a press position and combat liberalism. And with this investigation, we had found out that there were J.R. Valray's, his sabotage was not limited to that of our organization. We had, you know, we had received information as far back as to damage he had done with a group in San Francisco State, PASU, Pan African Student Union, even international damage, and how he was, you know, saying moved around as a youth in Cuba, and later on the stuff he engaged in Haiti, and back to nationally cases around the Oscar Grant case, the damage was done with that, and so on and so forth, and a long history, a long litany of some incidents that could be summed up as nothing less than crimes that were committed against the community. And so several years back, I think in fact 2011, I had offered a piece entitled The Defection of Cleveland Valray Jr., which gave, you know, say, not only gave an insight within our organization, but just even the damage that was done, you know, again from Valray, who at that time we thought who was representing himself as a member of our central committee. So it gives the details of what we know about him. And let me say this in all humbleness. We're still learning. In fact, I would take breathers at times because, again, I'm flashing back on a lot of situations, a lot of contradictions. And we combat this liberalism, and I want to say this, too, in all humbleness, that individuals don't make history, people do. Because a lot of people say, well, man, it was Chairman Fred that done this, and he exposed this, and, in fact, in the situation there, the federal, the community, the people are calling these questions. Again, just to reiterate what Minister, the former Deputy Minister of Health for the Black Panther Party, Ronald Doc Satchel, said, the Black Panther Party is not talking about overthrowing this system. We're talking about exposing the contradictions, exposing the injustices. We have simply did is, again, expose these contradictions and took a position that people, that struggle people to combat liberalism. And the people themselves have been bringing us information. We've been learning so much. We've been a barrage of information. I mean, again, just today, I'm still, as we speak, I'm still getting information. Stuff that happened, you know what I'm saying, again, on our watch, which we take a position that we have a responsibility. And I say the POCC, our organization, we said we got a responsibility to expose and deal with the contradiction, because a lot of stuff, you know, went down, under our watch. So we took a personal position and said, let's call the question and lay out the history. And we're still getting call-ins as we speak from Houston, Texas, Atlanta, Ohio, you name it. Well, people are calling in with various testimonies. Oh, man, we didn't want to say this because we didn't have a political vernacular to say this. We felt we didn't want to damage the movement. We felt like, you know, saying that only way we can get our word out is go through the SF Bayview, you know, so we don't want to compromise that, or so on and so forth. People say, well, no, we don't. People are saying, well, we're going to combat liberalism. We're going to call this question. So, again, in some sense of the words, we ourselves, we are students, and we study the people. We have been listening. We have been learning. We've been taking the information. You know, and embarrassing. And it's embarrassing to say this. I'll even say, we have to do a self-check. We say, let's call ourselves to some questions. Some basic questions. That even with membership, we talk about them, we have to ask. We say that one of my comrades said, what do you mean, Chairman, my basic questions? I said, what was his name? I say, for years, we were in the person, this guy's name was J.R. And I remember discussing later on, I said, wait a minute. We had to struggle about this, even to get to the point to recognize his actual name was Cleveland Valray Jr., the son of Cleveland Valray Sr., which, you know, his elder's history is laid out also, and we came to grips to find out why he was fighting for us not to know that his actual name was Cleveland Valray Jr., due to the fact that he had prompted himself as his flame of revolutionary, and he had even given many people the impression that even if you ask a traffic director for directions on the streets of New York, he made you feel as though you were some sort of snitch or informant, and all the quote unquote hell he was raising in California, it had never came up to common people that he was the junior to Cleveland Valray, who has a long history with U.S. Special Forces. And that's not to say that anyone has a relative that's in the U.S. Army or different, you know, alignment with the U.S. government should be indicted or called, you know, saying they themselves, you know, with U.S. imperialism. But however, we took into account his history. But, you know, saying, I mean, again, and how his position was of dealing of absolutes, of, you know, saying, calling people to question about, you know, if they even knew a person or related to the state. And again, so we had looked at it with dialectical materialism. So, wait a minute. No wonder there was a concerted effort, a concerted effort to deny this relationship or not let this be knowledgeable. Because, again, this is something that people question, why this never came up?
Mm-hmm. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here. I'm with you.
Okay. So now, to fast forward just for a moment, Kira Faye, did you see the recent response that apparently the person named JR wrote in terms of why he did not or why it was not conveyed or something to that effect? The bottom line is, did you see a recent posting that JR made in regards to some of the things that are being said that he may be involved?
In fact, I was doing an interview, I think, 2 nights ago, and I was on an interview with. They read it to me, and give my response. They read that response to me, and I made my position clear. I basically reiterated what we've been saying, we've been saying for years. Because one, I want to stress this. This is not some sort of personal subjective beef. That's what a lot of people try to limit this to. Even a lot of people refer to themselves as progressive, who try to devalue this question into some sort of personal subjective beef. This is not a rap war. This is a political contradiction that we raise. And our thing is, again, that we have some clarity. Let's heighten the conscious level so we can say, okay, whose interest does individual work in? And also, I want to make a point that my position, this is, a lot of people have already just now read without the defection of Cleveland Valray for whatever reason, whether it be that due to the situation around Malcolm Shabazz or due to whatever reason they just now read this, I want to stress the fact again that this paper was authored in 2011, I believe, because the fact is, I want to say this also, in my line of work, in my genre, being victimized by the counterinsurgency is an ongoing thing. This is not my first time. I'm sure it won't be my last time.
Right.
We've had to deal with contradictions, and you can go back and look, type my name in and look at Google it. I'll tell people, this is an era of, social media, you name it. Type in Chairman Fred Hampton Jr. Responds to state slander years ago. Type in the defection of Cleveland Valray. That's been an ongoing attack, not only upon myself, but upon our organization. But a lot of times people don't want to talk about it to become a safe subject. We cannot afford the luxury to wait to become a safe subject. We call these contradictions while the wounds are open, while we're being victimized by it. I will not take for granted by one day the fact that, by one bit, that I am still alive. When I authored that paper, I recall it. I'm flashing back on it because I'm literally in the same place where I was at. One time I was writing some of the pieces about that. And I was stashing papers, pieces of notes throughout the country. Because the more I was learning, I was like, I'm not going to make it alive through this. It was like deja vu. And I remember just, encountering certain people and being blown away. Literally, by some of the what I thought was liberalism, by certain individuals who at one point I respected. I talk about this in the reflection paper. It was a learning process for me. It was a cleansing process for us. And I done it in a way that it could be used as a prototype or an example for not only other organizations, but our community in general, not only for today, but for the present, but for the future.
We only have 5 minutes or so left, and I want to bring in, I think this is Brother Lee on our line. I want to get his question or comment in. This is one of the organizations, and I'm going to say one of the few organizations that I have some respect for that represents Pan-Africanism or represents a more black African perspective. And so I'm going to let Brother Lee come in to bring his comment or question. Hold on, Brother Lee. I think I got you right about here. And Brother Lee will be joining us tomorrow night as well when we talk about African Liberation Day, the observance for it, et cetera, et cetera. Brother Lee, do we have you on this line?
Yes, you do, sister. How y'all doing today?
Good, thanks. All right. We only have a few minutes, brother, but I know you've been holding for a while, so I wanted to get your comment in.
Yeah, I'm not going to say much because we will have a chance to speak to the people tomorrow night.
Mm-hmm.
But this whole discussion brings to my attention in terms of two things. the old adage that we understand that is true based upon our history is that we will never get unity until we have organization first. Organization, people chose unity. If you want to solve these problems that we are dealing with, we must be organized. That's number one. Number two, I think the history and the conditions that our people face globally was based upon the consequences of the Pan-African conference that took place in 84-85. And at that point, historically, they dispersed Africans all around the world. So whether they're Africa, Central America, North America, Caribbean, the same institutions that has existed to build against our existence, a survival, and want to keep us in a state of dependency, this is why we continue to have the same problems. So again, it's another indication that's clear. Until we achieve this issue of this question of Pan-Africanism, the African people throughout the world will suffer. And we're suffering because our primary contradiction is capitalism and imperialism. And they have different sets of tools that they use to oppress our people. Now, when we talk about other races or groups of people, how they treat us, they are victims of capitalism too, imperialism. You must understand that. Because the fundamental issue among Imadon folks or these other oppressed groups of people is the class question. You have certain class who have interests who ties into the interests of the ruling class and those who have wealth. And what they do is they act out the policies of these people. So we can't make that mistake. Of course, I'll get a chance to talk to my brother Randy later on this question of relationships and coalitions. We would like to share with the people historically, Brother Kwame Ture gave us a lesson into this question of politics, coalition politics. We need to reread the book, Black Power, Stokely Speaks. What they talk about, him and Charles Hampson talk about the contradiction about building coalitions and alliances. So on that note, anyway, I'd like to say hello to Brother Fred, my brother Randy. Continue your work, and we look forward to speaking to the people tomorrow. We thank you for your show.
All right, my brother. Well, thank you.
We can go back at you, brother.
All right. Brother Randy, you have some closing comments. We're down to our last few minutes, and we're going to go to our closing comments for tonight.
Yes. We should, as the people, as he said, organize, unite, and fight. And the end result is we're not the ones laying face down on the pavement when we've achieved what our ancestors wanted us to do.
All right.
Well, Empress, I just want to give you, thank you for the opportunity, and the listeners, and the people in general. Thank you for the opportunity for giving us. Thank you for giving us the opportunity to have the time to rap with the people. With these pressing updates, I would be remiss, being that what day this is, and we're coming up on the birthday of Malcolm X. I just want to.
That's right.
I want to state one of our mantras for our organization. We say we are the great grandchildren of Garvey, the offspring of Malcolm, and the Cubs of Panthers. And I just want to extend a clenched fist salute to that of Malcolm X. And just and there's no way possible that I or we can thank him enough for the prototype, for the example he laid out for us to be able to speak on our own terms, to be able to fight for that precious entity. That precious entity, and I'm going to say this, I've said this before on the radio airwaves. In fact, some people consider it a profane word. Many of the petty bourgeoisie, the white left forces consider this a profane word. And we may get reprimanded by the FCC for saying this word, but that of self-determination. Self-determination.
One of my favorite words.
Yes, indeed. And Malcolm X, who pressed that, who spoke, who taught, who, man, empowered us and instilled in us to fight on our own terms, in our interests. Long live the legacy of Malcolm X.
No doubt. And with that said, family, I want to thank all of you as well for tuning into this special edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. Thank all of the callers that called in and certainly those who are listening in via the Internet as well as on your phone. We will have our regular program tomorrow night starting at 10:30. Eastern Time. And again, this was a special edition of New Day. Tomorrow we will continue our tribute, of course, to El-Hajj Malik El-Shabazz. And tonight, again, we are thankful and also feeling, you know, very responsible in making certain that we continue the dialogue as necessary, and we will continue to do so as it pertains to Malcolm Latif Shabazz. Again, we want to thank all of you for tuning in, and we're going to leave out tonight with none other than Robert Nesta Marley. With that thought, get up, stand up, and that's what we're here to do. Tim and Fred, as usual, much love to you. Thank you so much for taking the time to join us tonight, and as well, Dr. Randy Short, Asante Sana, Ma'ahotep to you as well.
Thank you.
Right, thank you, right back at you.
We love you. We thank you. We thank you for being a warrior sister, because you're helping us as men to stand up. I just love you, and I love what you're doing. It's always a pleasure to be in your service and to speak for our people.
Right on.
Thanks, and it is indeed a pleasure and an honor to do so. Before we leave out, we want everyone to know that you can hit us up at nationalmwm@aol.com or mwmsisterhood@aol.com, and that's spelled mwmsisterhood@aol.com. I want to also remind you that the upcoming Men and Women March reunion will be taking place in October, and kicking it off on October 25th. We will be in front of the Justice Department. We charge genocide.
Yes.
Fred will be with us. Brother Randy will be with us. Hopefully you all will be with us. We charge genocide and demand that this government not only does an independent investigation into eugenics, but also we will make the demand to free all of our political prisoners. Until next time, family, again, we thank all of you. We'll be back tomorrow, same place, in living color. Until then, remember, we leave you as we oftentimes greet you in the spirit of mind and Hotep, but remember, there can be no real peace until there is justice. And that's my eye. Until tomorrow. Kamoja to the Shenda. Together we shall win.
Get up, stand up, stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Get up, stand up. Stand up for your rights. Get up, stand up. Don't give up the fight. Beautiful sin, great God wisdom from the sky. Take away everything and take everybody's behind. But if you know what life is worth, you will look the north of your earth and now that you see the light. Stand up for your right. Get up,
get up, get up,
get up,
get up. Get up for your right.
Get up for your life.